given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. At that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. I'm going to finish it at that point and just give a few thoughts on the 72, the sending out of the 72. I think it's a really intriguing passage because the first question comes to mind is, who are these people? They're not the 12 apostles. We don't know any of their names. They're completely anonymous. I imagine that they were the group around the 12. Maybe some of them wanted to be among the 12, but didn't make the cut. You know, they didn't get selected. They'd been following Jesus. They'd been hanging on his every word. But they were on the fringe a bit. They were unknown. They were anonymous. They were the also-rans. The 72. We don't know their names. They've made it into the scriptures, but we don't even know their names. They were the ordinary people. Maybe some of us this evening feel a bit like that. Maybe you don't see yourself as one of those super gifted people, the people who end up on the platform. Maybe you're really reluctant to sign up for Ryan's This Week, Next Week. No, what's it called? Last Week, This Week. Because, you know, to be up on the platform, you know, that's not you. You like to sit back in the shadows a bit. Sometimes you regret that. You don't feel valued. Perhaps people don't even know your name. If you feel like that, if you feel ordinary, then the 72 represent you. And Jesus calls you something. He calls you a worker. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. And in the way that often ends up in prayer, you ask God to do something for you, and you are the one that ends up doing it, because God said, great, are you volunteering? That's you then. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out the workers, and Jesus immediately says, and by the way, that's you. The point is, you can be involved in the purposes of God. You can be caught up in God's work. Jesus has got an assignment for you. And it's a dangerous assignment. Because Jesus says, go, I am sending you out as lambs among wolves. And then you're not to take a bag or a purse or sandals. I'm assuming that is spare sandals, because otherwise they're going completely barefoot. In other words, you're not to rely on your own resources. You're not to stock up on everything that you possibly need. Try to work it out yourself. Try to engineer the circumstances so that you can manage. No, you're to utterly throw yourself into the mercy of God, depending on him for your very life. Totally relying on God. And then you're not to greet anybody on the way. You're so focused on the task that God is calling you to, this assignment that Jesus has given you, that you're just going to go for it. Well, now let's look at what happened with the 72. They came back, and it had worked. They returned, it says, with joy, and said to Jesus, "Lord, even the demons submit to you, submit to us in your name." And this is one of the very few occasions in the Gospels where Jesus gets really excited. Because it says, at that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit. I think he was just a little bit hyper. This was Jesus at his most animated. He says, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven." And it goes on to say, "I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for that was what you were pleased to do." You see, God is doing his kingdom work not through the superstars, not through the highly qualified, not through those people who have got huge resources, but he was doing it through the immature, the weak, those without great resources, those who feel ordinary. One of the things I love is when the children from kids' church in the morning services, sometimes we get them to come through and pray for the adults. I think we ought to do it more, actually. But we get them to come and pray for the adults. It's absolutely amazing seeing kids laying hands on adults and see amazing healings because they have such faith. But Jesus, in this passage, when he's referring to little children, he's not, of course, talking literally about little children, but he's talking about those who feel like a child inside, those who feel weak and frail and unimportant and small. And when those people step out of their comfort zones, when those people go out like lambs among wolves, trusting in God utterly to supply their every need, relying on the power of the Holy Spirit to minister through them, not their own good ideas, their own resources. When they do that, amazing things happen. I've seen this happen many, many times. Particularly, one of the things I sometimes do is I go and speak elsewhere. At another church or at a conference or something. And it's a funny thing. They never really seem to invite me back to the same place. But anyway, I go and I speak at these other places. And I always love to take a little team with me, a little team of people, not necessarily experienced people, but people who are going to come along, support me, and pray for people, get perhaps some prophetic words for people, prophesy over people, pray for the sick, do all that kind of stuff. And so we go off to these meetings and I speak and they do all the stuff. And then we have the most amazing journey back. It almost always involves chips. Because you have to stop for chips after you've been praying for the sick, don't you? It's just mandatory. But it also involves great excitement because they're coming back. They've seen God at work. They are utterly amazed that God used them. They're, in effect, saying, "Even the demons submitted to us in Jesus' name." They're so excited. Because when we step out like that, even if they're little steps, something spectacular is happening that is declared in the heavenlies. I mean, Jesus observed this, that when people step out, when the weak step out, Satan is dethroned. I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven, says Jesus. Because God's people are beginning to act like God's people. And Jesus goes on to say, you know, I've given you authority over snakes and scorpions. That's clearly a metaphor for evil spirits and the powers of darkness. Nothing will harm you. You know, you're with me. The devil is losing his grip on humanity. There's a great battle going on, and it's being won. And the key soldiers in that victory are the weak and the timid and those who don't have any great resources. Perhaps those who are anonymous. We don't even know their names. The ones on the fringe, the outsiders, the ordinary people. No wonder Jesus got so excited. I'm now going to hand over to Caroline.
Thanks, Henry. So I'm Caroline. I'm a World Mission pastor here at St. Bees. If you don't know me, I spent 5 years in Bolivia as a mission partner with St. Bees, where I worked with a poor community, and they earn about 40p a day per person, so pretty poor, and their mentality is, we're born poor, we'll die poor, and there's nothing that we can do about it. So we set up this project where we teach 100 children and their families that they were made in the image of God, that he's got a plan and a purpose for them, and that he's given them talents and abilities that they can develop, discover and develop, and therefore they can use those to have a better life. Not just those things, but also, as we're hearing, do greater things than that. So what we've seen is this community is on a completely different trajectory. The kids are changing, the parents are changing. Boom, great. But my story, kind of, I resonate more with what we've just heard from Henry. One of the verses, it was verse 3, if we go to the next slide. Jesus says, go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. And this resonates with me. I think sometimes when we have mission partners, we're going to hear more from them later, sometimes we hear what they're doing, and they're like, oh my goodness, I could never do that. Like, it just seems too beyond what I could do. But often it's more this case. We're sent out like lambs among wolves, not wolves among lambs. And that's how I felt in Bolivia. If you're going to put your money on one of them, who are you going to put it on, the lamb or the wolf? Wolf. Yeah, exactly. But God doesn't pick the kind of the burly, big, strong people and say, yeah, that's the one. I'm going to send them. They're going to go and do everything. They're not going to need to call on me for help. They got it sorted. No, he sends, the weak, and that's exactly how I felt. I felt like I was out of my depth. Like, I got to Bolivia, I couldn't even speak Spanish. So we heard about going out like children. At least children can speak. I couldn't say anything. So I thought, I couldn't understand, God, what have you brought me here to do? This makes no sense. You should have sent this person or this person or this person. Definitely not me. And this meant that I had to call out to him, not just to know what to do, but for my very own kind of, as Henry said, my very own life. I didn't realize until I went how British I am. And I realized that our identity is intrinsically linked with what we do. We're doers. We have to achieve. We're so busy doing all this stuff. And so I got there, and not being able to do was a nightmare. And then God says to me, you're here in Bolivia primarily to know me better. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I can't write to my supporters and say, thanks for supporting me. I'm getting to know God better. Keep it coming. Thank you. I was like, no, there has to be a doing thing. So I was kind of obsessed with this, but this doing thing didn't come quickly. And so I had to just keep calling out to God. I had to pray much more than I ever had to pray in England. I had to read the Bible more. And when I was here, I always used to think, oh yeah, I should pray more. And may have my prayer life's not that good. I need to pray more. But I kind of didn't. But out there, I had no choice. Sink or swim. You know, if you're walking on water, anyone walked on water? A few? Okay, so Peter did. And when he did, when he had his eyes fixed on Jesus, he was fine. He was walking on water, doing the impossible, doing more than it was humanly possible in his own strength. And he was fine. He took his eyes off Jesus, and what started to happen? Started to drown, started to sink. And for me in Bolivia, it was like that. I had to keep my eyes fixed on Jesus, because when I didn't, I began to drown. And through that, through crying out, what am I supposed to do? He showed me each step of the way. So this, the fruit that now that I came and I could talk about and feedback to St. Bees, people would say, I could never do what you do. And I thought, what do you think it is I'm doing that you can't do? But it wasn't me. It was Jesus telling me, showing me what to do. And the fruit that came from that was undeniably him, because it was more than I was capable of, which I very well know. And so it was great to see that fruit. And that's brilliant. One thing that's great. But the other thing I realized in Bolivia that, it's great to rely on him out there because I have to. But I can't return to live in the UK unless I learn to rely on him, to trust in him, living in the UK. But what I found, do you know when you eat more, does your stomach kind of expand? So then you've got room for more, you can eat more. Anyone else get that? A few nods, good. So it was a bit like that. The more that I spent this time with God, I found when I came back here, actually it created this space, this kind of capacity for him, which I hadn't had before. And kind of like Alice was saying, we're so busy here, we don't have that time to just look up. And in Bolivia, that's not all I had time to do, but I spent a lot of time looking up. And I loved what I saw. And so I come back here now, and nothing compares to that. So I've had let go of things, but he's so much more. So now I've got this hunger and thirst for him. It's kind of weird. Sometimes I'm I need to spend time with Jesus. Not, I need to get my Bible out. And so that I feel is something God has given me through this time in Bolivia. This command to go, who is this for? Is it just to the people abroad, just for the 12? Or just for our mission partners we've got on the board over there? We've just heard no from Henry because it's the 72. This command is for all of us to go. And that may be abroad or it may be in the UK. And I think the main difference of going abroad is literally you're more out of your comfort zone. Here, at least you can speak the language and you might be skilled in your job and what you do. So the temptation is to do it in your own strength. Think, I've got this. I can do this. The temptation is always to stay, or the challenge is to not stay in the boat, to get out there on the waters, to go like the lamb among the wolves. One thing I really love about St. Bees is that since I've been away, they've started these missional communities. So now we're seeing more and more people from St. Barnabas locally going out like lambs among wolves, so living these kind of missional lives. Because that stuff, when you're walking on the water, that's where it's scary. You have to trust God and it's nerve-wracking. You have to let go of things like maybe your identity or other things. Keep your eyes on him. But that's where you see things which are bigger than your own self and where your relationship with him soars. So there is a cost, but it's definitely worth it. So going back to the World Mission work, as the World Mission pastor, I work with a group of volunteers called Mission Task Force, or MTF. Have you heard of that? Few? Yes. Yeah, a few on odds, great. So we have our mission partners around the world, as we said. If we go to the next slide, you'll see what this group of people look like. And our mission partners, as we've heard, they're out like lambs among wolves. They're often on their own. They need our support. They don't have this that we have, as in they can't come and meet with us every week. They're out in different places. So they even more, they need our support. So what these guys do is they stay in touch with two or three mission partners, know what's going on in their lives, and we all meet together every 6 weeks, and we hear what's going on. We pray for all of them, which is a really great thing. As Henry said, if you don't know about the work of World Mission staff here at St. Bees, it is amazing. But I think kind of what's happened is that because this has to be a closed group, because it's where their kind of personal information comes through, it's not public, it means there's been no kind of stepping stone, maybe, kind of into it. You hear little bits here, but you can't hear that much. So I want to share with you kind of two major changes or key developments within world mission here. So one is the Crossing Cultures Missional Community. Anyone heard of that? It's a new one. Oh, yeah, we've got a few. Okay, so, you can see on the slide up there, basically the idea of this missional community is to reach out to people from other cultures, hence Crossing Cultures. And we do that here, there, or far. So the English Cafe meet on the high road, and we meet with people. That's Pete Grant. We're going to interview. There he is. Do you want to wave? Yeah, there is. We're going to interview him in a bit. But we do English conversation classes with people from different nationalities, and there's so many in London. You don't have to go abroad to meet people from other cultures. So we do that. You'll notice that MTF aren't on this screen. That's because we've changed the name. Often, people say, what does that mean, the name? So we've changed it to World Mission Support, because we support World Mission. And that's split into two teams. The long term, they support our long termers, and the short term team support. You got it. So that's kind of this new missional community. So our mission partners are going to be invited to be part of this community, and when they come back, that's where they're going to feed into. So we're going to get to hear all of their exciting stories. We're going to eat a lot because you have this food from different cultures, which is great, and we'll be praying for nations and all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in long-term or short-term mission, now that is the place where you can go and find out more, get to know us. So that's kind of, one of the key changes. Then the other thing, let's just go to the next slide. You can meet the leaders of the missional community. So on the right, we've got Esther, and she's the one heading up the short-term team. So short-term stuff will go to her. Then we've got Pete. Do you want to wave again, Pete? So Pete and Chris, who's on the right, sorry, this is hard in this way, do the English Cafe, and I do the long-term team. So, going on to the next thing, this is what I'm really excited about. Well, that's the new logo. So you won't see the MTF logo. This is our new World Mission Support logo, thanks to Becky. Thank you, Becky. So, a new kind of vision that I have is to see more people from here going out to visit mission partners on kind of short-term trips, like one week or two-week trips. And the first team went out, late Friday night. If we go to the next slide, you'll see we prayed them out here last week, so you may remember the worship team that have gone out to Eastern Europe to be with the Lucas family for a week. They work in Eastern Europe, and they really are like lambs among wolves. They're doing church planting, and with their organization, there's various people around Eastern Europe that are doing that. They are isolated, and they're having this conference where they can all come together like an oasis. They can worship, because often they can't worship with other people, or they have to do it kind of whisper. They can't do it loud in case they're caught. So they're going to get together and be able to worship. So our team have gone out to serve them through doing the worship for them. But one thing I want to highlight is that Hannah on the right, she said to me last week, she said, I don't really know why I'm going on this trip, how I've got on this trip. And she said, I feel like I'm going to be the least significant person in this room, with all these missionaries, because, that thought that they're these super people. And she plays the piano, and she said, I don't feel like I'm that good at it, and I'm going to be playing for them, and I'm kind of out of my depth. And she said, but I'm excited to see why God's taken me. There must be something about this. And I was like, boom, that's it. That's what I want to see. More people from St. Bees going out, God taking to the places out of their comfort zone, to have to trust in him, and to just to have a different experience and to bring that back and impact their lives here. So Hannah also said she does mission here with her family and in her job, but here she wants to see like a different side of God, and she wants to bring that back. And even within the worship team, she said, I hope that will impact, our kind of our relationships and dynamics. So that is an example of what we want to see more of, so that we can go out, we can have this opportunity to walk on the water, to see different cultures, different where our mission partners are, to kind of be challenged by seeing how other people live and how other people live out the Bible. But it's not just all about us. Is it? Well, it shouldn't be. So going out there to mission partners, I've felt very much on my own. Loneliness was almost like felt physical pain, because it was just like really hard. So having people to come out to visit is great. The other thing is that when you come back here, often people change, and you think it's such a big church, and I don't know how to know these people. And you're so far, How do you build those relationships? So by us going out to visit them, we'll get to see, or more people here, we are to see what they're doing, where they are. Because we have the photos and things, but if a photo or a picture is worth 1,000 words, an experience is worth 10,000 pictures. So my kind of vision is that it will become a normal thing that we go out and see what they're doing, we work alongside them, we'll be challenged, they'll be supported, and it will be great. So my vision for kind of world mission at St. Barnabas is that through this and the developments with the Crossing Cultures missional community, and we're setting up these trips and with linking up more with mission partners, will be that world mission will become more of a part of the DNA of us as a church. And rather than just being like a thing for a few on the side and a hidden thing, it will become more part of our everyday kind of life and for more people to be involved. And it'd be something which is part of both transforming our lives and changing the world. But it's not going to happen overnight. For example, these trips, we've just done one. It was kind of easy with the worship team because it could only be people who can play something, which isn't me. So they've gone, but we're going to have to put lots more structures and things in place. So it will take a while, but that's the vision. Now we're going to hear from a few people who are involved with World Mission through St. Bees. So I'm going to invite Henry back up with Kerry and Pete and Virginia. And just as they're coming up, I just want to kind of read this. This is my prayer for us here at St. Bees, and it's from one of the songs, the lyrics from one of the songs that we sang earlier. And it's that we would let go of all we have just to have more of Jesus. And no matter what the cost, that we will follow him. That we will know that he is worth it all, and everything we lose we find in him. That we may always be before him reaching out for more, knowing that he is the promise, never failing, and that he is our reward.
Okay, well, let's get Kerry first. So, Kerry, you are one of our mission partners. You're based in Cameroon, which is in Africa, in Western Africa, in the kind of armpit of Africa, I think it's called, isn't it? Tell us what you do out there.
I'm part of a church planting team, and we're reaching out to people called the Fulbe, who are all Muslims. And I'm also part of a medical team as well.
How long have you been out there?
I started going 16 years ago.
Okay, so this is long-term. You live out there with all the people, and you're doing this amazing work. How's it going?
Well, it's been a bit interesting this year. Security situation's got a bit dicey, so we've all come away for a few months. But the church planting side is going incredibly well, and we're beginning to see some really exciting things that we've been longing for and waiting for a long time.
So just as things got really difficult from a security point of view, things have started to take off. Do you think those two things are connected?
I expect they are somewhere along the line. It's difficult to see, but we're completely trusting God to complete what he started. So we know he doesn't need us. He just invites us to join him. So we're looking forward to what we'll find when we get back there.
Okay, I think the question that probably would come to some people's minds is why? Why would you do this? You look reasonably normal. You don't look like some kind of dusty old missionary with a bun. What possessed you to go out to the middle of Africa and do this?
I ask myself that many times, but it's a call that God started to put on me when I was about 17, actually. So it was quite a long process, and it took me about 10 years to respond to that call. But the reason I'm still there, it is dusty and hot and nasty, but there's nothing like being the one who gets to tell somebody about Jesus for the first time. And that's why I do it. It's just wonderful. When you see that, just that dawning that comes on people's faces when they realize who Jesus is and what he's done and what that means. And It's the best privilege in the world. So that's why I do it, and I recommend it.
Thanks, Kerry.
Okay, so now to Pete. So Pete, you recently went to, Zambia. I picked the photo from Facebook, sorry. So what were you doing there? And did you use your skills from your like your job, your work here, or what?
No, not really. So we went with a charity tier fund, but then kind of World Mission, Atsonby's kind of supported us along the way. And we went to a charity called Jesus Cares Ministries, which is a great name. And it was basically a halfway house for kind of kids who were living on the street for various reasons, getting them back into education and living with their families again. And we were doing art classes, and I have no art qualifications at all, so yeah.
Super. So what made you go?
Curiosity, if I'm honest. I've always wanted to go to that part of the world, and I had 2 weeks annual leave, so I thought it was better than Magaluf, essentially.
And he said it, and it was brilliant. I asked him for an honest answer. And what did you get out of going?
I got loads. I think there's a bit of a temptation to go with a saviour complex and kind of think that you are going to transform the world in 2 weeks. When in reality, actually, in 2 weeks, you're inevitably going to get more out of it than you put in. And I think what I got out of it was seeing people's passion for the gospel. I mean, it's the country's 97% Christian, so people do just pray on the street. They love it. But the actual project itself was set up by a woman who used to be CEO of a bank in Zambia, and she kind of had seen the need in her community and just gave up her job, bought a house, and set up this charity. And so kind of that level of like passion and kind of obedience to God was kind of really inspiring, I think.
Brilliant. Thank you, Pete. Over to Virginia. Oh, Pete.
Virginia, come on. Now, Virginia, you're someone who's based here at St. Barnabas. We see you every week. But you've got a background in missions. You've been out with YWAM in the past, and you are now chair of World Mission Support. So you're really involved in supporting missionaries across the world based here. But what I want to ask about particularly is you go out yourself on kind of some form of short-term mission. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm a physiotherapist, and I go out in my holidays sometimes to give training to therapists in how to treat children with cerebral palsy. So the pictures of me when I went last time to the Sudan. And I've been to Uganda about 4 times and Zambia a couple of times. And I'm only there for a week or two. But it's just, I just love it. It's just so great to be able to give something and really see the therapists gain confidence in what they're doing, because they don't really often get any sort of hands-on training actually treating the children. They would have had maybe more theoretical training, but I get a lot out of it as well, just meeting them, meeting the families and so on.
So this is a different type of short-term mission. We have Pete, who went out, and he's not qualified as an art teacher, but you're actually going out and using a particular skill. You're also very involved in World Missions back here. What's your role there? What do you do?
Well, I chair the World Mission Support Group, so the long-term and the short-term, and I work alongside Caroline and Henry. And we meet every 6 weeks to support the mission partners. And we would do things like, if there's someone who's thinking about going into mission, we might be discussing, well, do they need any training? What sort of support do they need to really think about their call and where they're going to go? Or it might be looking at someone who's already out on the mission field and maybe their financial circumstances have changed. Or we might be looking at their budget and whether we need to increase the giving to them. Or maybe something sudden has come up, like they've got an opportunity to go on a special trip somewhere and they might need a bit of additional finance. or maybe they've come back for some leave, or else they've actually returned, and we might be talking about looking at debriefing them. Do they need any counselling? Do they need any other support?
So that's a pretty big role. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Okay, so now we're going to invite Kerry and Pete back because they snuck off. And we're going to, back up. We're going to invite you guys to come and pray for them, lay hands on them. As we heard, Kerry's in Cameroon and back for the moment, so we're not sure, you know, what's going on. Pete runs the English Cafe, part of the Crossing Cultures missional community. Virginia does amazing work with mission support. So we're going to lay hands on them. So anyone who wants to, please come up and we're going to pray for them together, followed by Ryan, who's going to pray for the World Mission Support guys. Don't be shy. Thank you. Come on up.
I think it's really interesting, actually. These three almost represent everything we're doing, really, because there's Kerry, who's a long-termer out there. There's Virginia, who's heading up the support of long-termers. And then there is Pete, who's just been on short-term and is running the English Cafe. So that kind of encompasses the whole of the World Mission Support stuff that we're doing. So it's really good to pray for them.